Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us today. Today is Manhattan Project Monday, and we discuss the issues of radioactive waste that is polluting our entire country. And today we have on the line with us, we're going to do an interview with actually two people today. And it got started because we have with us Chuck Hindman from Mid-America Restore, who we've interviewed before. His business is Mid-America Land Restoration. And as you've heard before, he discusses the importance of really carpet bombing our planet with microbes, really. And we also have on the phone someone new to our show, Matt Holstrunk, who I met with Mimi Gurman of No Nukes Northwest. We were met at a meeting. And Matt is a construction estimator who's been working with numbers all of his life. He's an independent researcher, and he does research for RadNet regarding, he reads the stuff at the EPA website, those scary things that are reported. You go to RadNet, you can see a map, and they tell us what the levels of counts per minute are, and then you click on it, and then there's kind of even more scarier information because it has these very high rates of gamma rays. And so let me introduce our guests. Thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
Hey, you guys. So this is Chuck. This is how we got it going. Chuck called me and said, you know, we were talking about being interviewed today, and he wants to discuss the EPA notices because they are off the charts, right, Chuck? Like, when you went to the website, this is why I wanted to ask Matt to come in, because he's been studying those charts. So, Chuck, why don't you first start with what you were discovered at the EPA website and how alarming it appears to be.
Well, when I started looking to back up the numbers that came out of Veterans today, Saturday morning, I started looking at the RadNet and found that they're climbing. They're getting worse and worse every week. The big alarming one that I found was Colorado Springs, according to this graph and chart, was well above the 10,000 count range.
And so, Matt, what do you think about this? Explain those rates where we're looking on that map where they have the 10,000 count range on those gamma rays. What does that mean?
Right, Lonnie. So anything that's up around 10,000 is probably, and I don't know for a fact what exactly the graph you were looking at, because RadNet breaks down their gamma into nine different ranges, and then they give a gross gamma.
Right.
And that sounds like it's a gross gamma number if it's up at 10,000.
Well, we were looking, I think where we were looking, Chuck, we were both kind of alarmed. We were on the website together. We were looking at the gamma rays. You know how they have the individual colored bars where they have different colored bars? Well, some of those were way, way, way high up. And on the basic range, you know, when you, before you clicked on to see the different various bars, you just saw one rate. It said count gamma. This is what got it started with Mimi Gurman. The graph said counts per minute, gamma rays counts per minute. And Chuck and I were like, wait a minute, doesn't gamma is like the worst, isn't that the most toxic that there is the gamma rays?
Well, for external exposure it is. For internal exposure it's not. Internally, beta and alpha is the worst. It's got the largest particle that it doesn't travel very far, but when it gets in you, it does really bad damage. And beta is similar, but not quite as bad. It's just an electron that fires. Gamma is actually just a ray. It's like a light ray, only really powerful, and it'll go right through you, and it'll ionize stuff when it hits you and change DNA. But you got to be careful with RadNet in trying to compare RadNet with other radiation monitors, because their stuff is so sensitive. They get counts that are 100 times more than anything you and I could get with any of our handheld radiation detectors. So they have a sensitivity there that is a lot higher. And just for the layperson to look at that number and say, well, it's high or low, you really can't do that without going into RadNet like I did and pulling out data, go all the way back and pull out as much data as you can and then graph it and then see what the trends are, what it's doing, what are the highs, what are the lows for that specific area, because it, with gamma, it changes with area too. The higher in elevation, typically right, you're seeing higher gamma. If the site is situated under the jet stream, typically we see higher gamma. If the site is away from a coastal area, you'll see higher gamma. So there's a lot of variables there that makes gamma a hard thing to look at. Beta is a lot simpler because it just goes from zero and goes up, and you can look at any city in the beta and compare it. While gamma is really hard to do. It's a real tricky thing.
Do they post the beta at the EPA website?
They post gamma. The beta has been phased out slowly. There's only a handful of cities around the country right now that still have beta going. One being, for whatever reason they can give, they really don't know why the beta stations are actually operating in Washington, D.C., but they are. But pretty much all of the ones on the West Coast here have been closed down. It's unfortunate because those were really climbing in the last few years and really getting at crazy levels. More so than the gamma, actually.
So, Chuck, do you have any information on this or questions?
And see, the chart that I was looking at, yes, he is correct. That 10,000 range is the gamma gross count rate graph.
Okay.
Yeah. So that one is the total then of all the gamma ranges, a total of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. The biggest batch in those ranges, the one that has the most gamma CPM, is gamma 2, which is what I've been studying, and it's right next to the X-ray range. So we're sort of talking the same things here when I'm talking gamma. If I talk gamma 2 and you're talking gross, the graph lines follow each other very, very closely.
Mm-hmm.
They don't divert like the gamma and the beta does. Those don't follow exactly together. They divert a lot, and you can have real high beta and low gamma, or vice versa. But with gamma, gross gamma and gamma 2, the graphs are almost identical. It's just the order of magnitude less for gamma 2, but it makes really good graphs. Out here on the West Coast, I've seen high gamma ranges up just in just gamma 2, I'm talking, not a gross, but I've seen high of 7,500 in Spokane, which is which is quite high.
What does that mean in real terms, though, Matt? Like, this is, we throw the, this is why I wanted you have on with me and Chip. You know, I'm easily excited, to be honest. Like, I'm in a perpetual state of freak out mode about all this stuff. Obviously, I'm on the radio 3 times a week to talk about it. So,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, I need to calm myself down here and understand, what does all this stuff mean? Like, that's the, Chuck and I were trying to figure, I mean, are the rates off the charts across the states, or are they, I mean, have we just, like, is it even worth looking anymore? Does it even matter?
Well, you know, since I think we had a really big, a fairly big hit on 2011 with Fukushima. And from what I've been seeing...
Well, that's been ongoing. That's the problem with Fukushima.
Well yeah, but the data that I've seen across the West Coast, up and down the West Coast, and this goes all the way from, I've got data now from San Diego, all of California, all of Oregon, all of Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, and Hawaii. And in looking at all that data, I saw that we had we entered the worst gamma year was the year 2013, which is really odd. And actually 2014 was worse than 2011. So 2011 hit. You know, we had some releases then. I think we had the most of the duration releases we had were in 2012, though, early. And then it backed off, but the radiation levels have slowly climbed and climbed. We've had some pretty high percent increases in the 5 years since Fukushima out here. For instance, Anchorage, Alaska, they're up 67% in average gamma.
Wow.
Riverside is up 48%. Los Angeles up 40. Juneau, Alaska, up 27.
What does
Seattle,
that mean in
up
real
25.
Terms? What does that?
What's that?
Mean? What does that mean in real terms? The gamma is up. What does that mean?
Well, that means. We have particles in the air, radioactive particles in the air that are producing gamma. And they're low enough where we can measure them. They've come down low enough for some reason. You know, I think a lot of this stuff stays up really high, and then the jet stream will dip down and bring it down, and you'll get a hot spot. It all has to do with this thing called a Hadley cell, which operates the jet streams, and those things bring stuff up and down and up and down and up and down, and you never know when it's gonna zip down and touch the ground and spike the graph. So we see that every once in a while. A lot of the spiking is also from, you know, probably nuclear reactor shutdowns when they vent prior to refueling or doing some maintenance on the reactor. We'll see spikes. And we really don't see spikes on RadNet. I'll have to tell you they don't show you the spikes. If it gets above a certain value, they just cut it off, and you don't see anything. You'll just see a blank little hole in the data.
Hmm.
And so it's really the data that you don't see that means it's high enough that the EPA is worrying about. All the stuff that they show us, for the most part, it's not high enough for us to worry about.
Hmm.
That's the conclusion I've come to.
Wow.
And one of the things that bothers me, when you open up the EPA site and then you try and go to cities, like go ahead and click on Kansas City, and the page is gone, not available. Same way with Kearney, Nebraska.
So they just don't report. Is that just the issue there, Matt? They just don't report.
Well, they have a few, you know, they don't seem to be updating the EPA's RadNet query site very good. A lot of the cities that are in there, like Chuck was saying, they don't exist. the monitors, they used to be there, but they don't, but they're not there anymore. They've taken them out, or maybe they're in the process of putting new ones in, and they haven't updated it. I'm not really sure, but I have seen that. I have seen they have bogus sites on there. The majority of them, though, do work. I'll have to say that.
Well, let me ask you this, because Chuck and I go to this website to find information. Do you think it's valuable for like a person like me or Chuck who don't, or especially me? I don't know about Chuck's expertise, but I look at this stuff and I'm like, you know, you click on the map, it says 398 counts per minute on a map. Does that relate to the gamma rays, or is that a different type of explanation?
Well, I guess you'd have to read what it's telling you there on that. Is this the EPA one, or is this the NetC site?
No, it's the EPA RadNet site. That's where we're going.
Okay.
We were talking about this. We wanted to go to the source, you know, the, quote, official source, because everybody says, well, it's not the official source. So we went to the EPA RadNet site, and it pops up this little map with all these dots around the country that gives us counts per minute. And they are like 298, 312, like high counts. Isn't that like super high? Aren't those numbers to be alarmed about?
I would say if they're showing the numbers, no. They're not.
Really?
Yeah. So, truly.
If they're showing the numbers, it's probably okay. It's when they stop giving us information, that's when we need to be worried about it?
Yes. That is what I have found.
Wow.
And see, what I've got a question is, you know, you go back to the early years before Fukushima, you know, our normals were 20s.
Yeah.
Now we're talking, you know, back then, abnormal was a 50 count. An alert or a warning level was 100 count. And used to be known, 300 count used to be known as an evacuation / hazmat.
Yeah, and I don't know.
They changed the rule book so many times, you know, they keep raising our limits, but then I keep thinking, you know, at one time, 300 was known to be a serious, serious issue.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Didn't it used to be 300 was like a big, big, big issue?
It was an evacuation / hazmat was what that level, 300 or above, was classified.
Yeah, that, you know, back I think when they first made that manual out, they were using detectors that really weren't as sensitive as what we got today, too. And right now with the sensitivity in our detectors, it's giving these high values when, you know, you could have a handheld right next door to one of these RadNet monitors and you'd be reading 100 times less. You'd never be able to get the counts that the RadNet monitors are getting, only because of the sensitivity. You know, they have a big fan that draws air in, you know, three times faster than we can breathe. And, you know, it just magnifies it. And that's where they're looking for sensitivity, because they're dealing with radionuclides that are just so few parts per million. They need to have a lot more air going through so they can at least detect them early enough. That's really giving all of these crazy, that's why we have a difference between what they're showing, what RadNet EPA is showing now, and the older documents that are stating, you know, like you said, 100 CPM, 300 CPM, 500 CPM was, you know, getting up really, really way up there back then. But those counters, those detectors back then, weren't as sensitive as what we're looking at right now.
This is a very big concern for me, Matt. I mean, obviously, Chuck and I have been on the phone quite a bit talking about this because, you know, we know that the Fukushima nuclear, I call it a volcano. I call it the Fukushima radioactive volcano because that's kind of what it is. It is nonstop spewing radioactive waste into our environment and into the Pacific Ocean. Nonstop now for 6 years. And so you would think, now have you in your studies, how long have you been doing these, looking at the EPA site? I mean, have you noticed a spike in the information they're telling us at least? Has it gone up, or is it they just lying to us and telling us, don't worry about it?
Well, this has been a real lesson for me in, I'm not sure what, but I can, seems like every time I take a graph, every time I get enough data, like a year's worth of data on a city, and I graph it, I look at it and go, wow, look at what's going on here. And that's happened, you know, time after time after time again, where I see all sorts of strange stuff going on with in the graphs that I can't come up with an explanation other than maybe if somebody is messing with the scale of the graph for some reason, trying to push stuff up and down and up and down. I mean, there's these big steps in a lot of these graphs where the radiation will jump 1,000 CPM just in a day, bam, up there, and it just stays at that level. And then it'll fall back down, or it'll go higher, or it'll do something else. And it doesn't seem to be tied in with anything that I can explain. And so,
do you think that see, Chuck and I, we were talking about this. I think they just do it just to confuse us. Like they're Chuck, when we were on the phone, we were freaked out about these 10,000 count. I mean, at first I thought it was 1,000 count. You're like, hold on there, that's 10,000. Like, how long have you been looking at these rates yourself, Chuck, for so long?
Well, with the EPA, I never did trust the EPA site. That's why I became a paid member and was really watching and following the Nuclear Emergency Tracking Center. And then when I started following Veterans Today and seeing their numbers, and I started trying to justify between the two sets of numbers and charts, and then I started watching the EPA again and three totally different indices, and they're coming up with totally different numbers.
Yes. Yes, they do. So I've talked with Bob Nichols down at Veterans, his group. I was talking with him a while back. And what he does, he adds everything together. So he adds all the beta together and then all of the gamma ranges together to get his number, which is one way of doing it. And it's probably a good way of doing it.
It's probably the most accurate.
I would say so, because it includes everything. It includes all of the different radioactive particles that are being measured right now, that being the beta and the gamma. We don't really measure alpha. It's too hard to do. It doesn't travel far enough. So it's a good way to do it, but the problem is nobody else does it like that. So NETC does not do it like that, and RadNet doesn't do it like that. And so nobody has gotten everybody on the same page. You know, everybody, and the reason why they're doing it has to be because they don't want us to know the truth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you keep everybody confused, and nobody will be able to understand it except the guys that, you know, that have all the data and going way, way back. And another thing about RadNet is they don't let you look back too far in the data. I can only get back to 2010 in a couple of sites, and you can't go way back and compare it to what's going on today. They want you to start at 2011, which, you know, to me that's hiding
signature.
Something, you know. Yeah, they're doing that for a purpose, you know. And what is that purpose? Is it a good purpose or a bad purpose? Of course, they probably don't want everybody to freak out, you know, and that's always they're saying, you know, oh, we can't give out these high readings because people will freak out and panic. And I'm like, I don't think so. I think if you educate the people about it, they can deal with it. It's when they don't know, that's when they freak, right? When you don't know, that's when you start freaking.
Is educating the people that there is something that we can do about it.
Yeah.
you know, going around and raising our radiation safety limits in our drinking water all the time and not teaching the people that there is something we can do about that. And then forcing this acceptable death rate that they've changed on us when we can do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really the best way to handle it, the way they're doing it, that's for sure.
It's not even not just the best way, but don't you think that it's even worse than not the best way? It's almost intentional?
Well, you know, if you look back on what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has always done and what they are set up to do, they are set up to be mouthpieces for the industry to take nuclear and push it forward. And they had to do that for weapons making. You know, and now we're left over with this old system that was put in place to try to protect us, sort of, and it's become something that is not protecting us anymore. It's putting us at risk more than it's protecting us, is what it's doing.
You're saying the RadNet system is putting us up at risk because they're not managing?
I'm saying the nuclear power plants and you know, the nuclear weapons.
Oh, well,
the nuclear industry in itself.
Well, that's the whole little mentality of, you know, war is peace, right? Like, that's the new meme, is war is peace and radiation will help protect you. So, you know, eat up. You know, this is why we have the radio show. This is why I encourage people to get out and speak out, because we are really being led to slaughter. Like, the whole thing about we need nuclear isn't, it's a failed experiment. I actually go on Twitter and I follow Secretary Moniz from the DOE, and I tweet on his page all the time that he needs to be ashamed of himself, that nuclear is a failed experiment. I mean, we have all these aging nuclear power plants that are falling apart, and the dirty little secret is they can't shut them down. They are not going to shut them down, no matter how. Look at Indian Point leaking massive amounts of tritium into New York City. There is no conversation, real conversation, about shutting it down.
Yeah.
That's just not
yeah,
even...
They really failed when it came to, you know,
protecting
the environment from the releases. They just don't have any way of doing that. You know, when a plant gets old and the earth moves, you're going to crack pipes, you know, and it's a pretty sad situation.
Well,
they really need to...
Go ahead.
They really need to close all the power plants down. You know, maybe not all at once. I mean, that would be ideally. I mean, you probably can't do that. But, I mean, there should be a systematic way of getting them down and ramping up in renewables and solar and wind and whatever else we can do, and get these things out of the picture completely, because there is so much nuclear waste right now stored at these sites that, my God, if we ever have if the grid ever goes down for any length of time, it's not going to be good.
Well, how long do you think that they can sustain without the grid? Because, you know, we have these rolling power outages. It was about 8 or 9 years ago, we had, like, New York City black for, like, 10 or 12 hours or a day or so. How long can these power plants go without electricity?
Well, they have backups. So they have, you know, a diesel generator that'll kick in, but that's only good enough for the fuel tank, and then you have to make sure you have supply. The problem with over at Fukushima is they had the infrastructure destroyed, so the roads were down, and they couldn't get the tankers in to replenish the diesel tanks. So that's the bad scenario. If you have a hurricane, tsunami, something that destroys your ability to get your tanker in to replace the diesel fuel for the generators, or if the generators themselves get destroyed by wind or hail or lightning
or a tsunami, what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, that's even more grave because when we look at the East Coast, I mean, there's two things that keep rolling in the back of my head ever since I've really discovered how irresponsible the Atomic Energy Agency was in the United States, the AEC and now the NRC. In fact, I read a report that said that the NRC used to be called the lapdogs of the industry, and now they're not just the lapdogs. They are the promoters. They are working to keep them open despite the fact that we have these old ailing nuclear facilities. And the real fear is that our storage, as Donna Gilmore has highlighted, the storage tanks in the United States are only a half an inch thick. And as Mimi has stated, once they start leaking, they can't move the waste because they can't get into it. They can't start doing it. And they don't look at the waste until it becomes critical. So the whole thing is like, let's just poison America. That seems to be the plan. Let's poison America. And, you know, the EPA puts up these, like if people go to the EPA website, much of the information, as Donna said, is right there on the website. Correct, Matt?
Yeah, you can get data back to 2011 for just about any city. Yeah, it's there. It's hard to work. It's hard to work with. Hard to get it and download it. They love to mess with their data. They'll scramble it all up sometimes on you, and they'll add in, they'll double up stuff and triple up. And sometimes I see an hour reading that comes in duplicated 20 times, 20 different spots. so you got to go through the data and you got to hack it all apart and try to get it straight, and it's really a mess to work with. It's almost driven me crazy a couple times.
So they intentionally obfuscate the information so that the general, like Chuck and I, we were on there looking at these numbers, like, you know, I know you're only looking at the East Coast, but what is the, I mean, on the West Coast, but Chuck lives in the heart of America. You're in Kansas, right, Chuck?
Yep.
Yeah. So,
and that's why I said Kansas City's page is down. The one that's just right north of me there at Kearney, that one's down. But I could pull up Wichita, and Wichita, Kansas is, in my opinion, has problem child too.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, if they're not showing it, then it's some pretty high readings. It's not. It's interesting if you work with the RadNet data, especially if you work with it on a daily basis or multiple times in a day like I've done. And I did that so I could try to find out what their cutoff points were on their values. So every city has a different cutoff point for beta and gamma and all the different gamma ranges. And if one of the points goes off scale, they'll chop the whole, they usually chop the whole hour out so you don't see any of it.
Right.
But what they'll do if it, let's say they have a cutoff point at 1,000 CPM. When the data hits 1,000 CPM, they hold it. They won't show it to us, and they'll watch it and see what it does. And if it goes up above another higher set point, let's say 1,500, then they will never show it to us. And then it'll come back down. And when it comes back down, then they'll show us everything between 1,000 and 1,500, but they won't show us anything higher. And so it's a real interesting way they play with their data, but they time lag it too. I mean, some of this data doesn't come out, you know, usually it's a 2-hour lag from what I've found. And if they're holding it, it could be
days.
Months before you see it.
Months?
It could literally be months.
So is that when they have, like, big gaps, when you were saying you look at the data, when you look at the graphs, you blow them up, there's, like, little jumps, little skips, the data stops, and then it starts, and then graph line goes on. They just, like, cut that day out, like, let's pretend this one doesn't exist, kind of a deal?
Exactly.
See,
sometimes they'll have,
you know,
sometimes they'll leave, oh, go ahead, Chuck.
You know, like right now, I said Kearney, Nebraska is one of the areas. Because I follow, and when I started this several years ago, I kept monitoring my territory and doing like a bullseye chart. Further out I went, but I started in the middle of the country and I worked my way out. And I've noticed every time I did too many shows and different reportings on this territory, Kansas City would go down, or Kearney would go down, Denver and Colorado Springs would go down, and so on and so forth. But like right now, Kearney, Nebraska, last time it was on was March 24th is the last recorded day of this year for Kearney, Nebraska.
Hmm. So you think, and is there any explanation? Is that a system that's been, that's a good question, Chuck, or Matt. Is there a way to find out if those monitors are permanently shut down or they're being replaced? Is there any way to look on the website that'll tell us? Okay, so Kearney, Nebraska's been down since March. Is there any way we can look to see when we could anticipate it being brought back up?
I don't believe they have that kind of data. I know they have that for the nuclear reactors when they shut them down and when there's maintenance. But I haven't seen anything on the RadNet system on their monitors like that. So they'll shut stuff down, and you don't know what the reason is. You know, that's the problem. You don't know if it's a maintenance issue, or you don't know if it's a off scale high reading. You just don't know.
Now, let's make this clear. I didn't find that particular information on Kearney on EPA, on the RedNet. I went over to NEPC and backstepped to when the last time they got a recording on Kearney, and that was March 24th.
Okay, be careful with that, because NETC only down. I talked to those guys, too. Those guys only download every 6 hours. And so,
well, what's the implication of that? That was my next question to you, Matt. What is the difference? Because, Chuck, you use different sites, right? You don't just use the EPA. You use the NETC, and who are they? Are they part of the government?
No, they're a private industry.
They're a private corporation, or are they a volunteer group?
Basically volunteer. The only money they make are those that pay for a membership. They've got a free NETC, which gives you limited range and charts. And then if you become a paid member, then you get to see a whole lot more data than what you do on the free side. And it's only $20 a year, so you're not paying a whole lot.
Yeah. But my question, is there any checks? Like, this is the problem, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, but this is the problem that I see with the EPA. The EPA has checks and balances. They just don't give us information. They just withhold the information. Whereas with me, the NETC has no verifiable checks and balances. For example, 2.5 years ago, when I started paying attention to this pretty intensely, so did two or three people in my community. One of these people I know joined that website. When it was raining, he would go put his Geiger counter monitor right next to the window, next to the where there's a bunch of metal parts in his house. Like, he would, instead of just sticking his monitor outside in the rain, he'd go to where he would think that there would be the most accumulation of radiation. And Eugene, Oregon, always had monitored on there way higher sites than my Geiger counter would show. Because here's a guy inside that site intentionally, you could probably get those numbers, but it kind of made me nervous that there's no... Am I incorrect on that, Matt, that the NETC has no checkpoints, no verification?
Well, I was able to find out... Go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead, Chuck. Okay.
Hello?
What I was able to find out was, you know, if you study the NETC, you can figure out which one are monitors of the EPA, their information dumps that they get from the EPA, versus what your scenario with the personal Geiger counter readings. You can figure out which ones were which, and I always followed and monitored the ones that were known as the EPA site.
Yeah, and that's That's correct too. That's what I found, that they have tried to use the EPA system as much as possible, and just a couple of years ago they were basically giving beta readings out. They weren't giving the gamma readings out, but they had to switch because the EPA dropped beta. So now they use gamma 6, I think, which is a cesium, which is one of the cesium range gamma ranges.
That's an interesting question. So they changed the method of, at the EPA, they changed their method of reporting without any notification. They just said, oh, we're going to start reporting the gamma and not the beta?
Well, they gave a real strange reason why they were going to eliminate the beta. They were saying that the cellular services that were going in were interfering with the beta readings, and they couldn't give real time beta readings because of the cell service that was happening. And I've been checking on that and researching it and trying to figure out if I can find anybody who's actually done a study on that, and I haven't found anybody.
Huh? So they just said something without verification. As usual.
Well, you know, when you watch these readings, these beta readings, and go up and up and up like they've been doing, and you can, if you follow the graphs, and you can get in the data and start looking at it, you can actually see where the points drop down to zero, and probably they go negative because they have the scale set so low that they're having a problem with that. They keep getting zero readings, and you can't show beta data with zero readings, right? With a zero CPM. That's just not really possible unless you're enclosed in probably a Faraday cage or something. So they kept bouncing, going negative and giving zeros, and I think that's the reason why they had to give it up, is they couldn't keep the high readings down by turning the scale down, because it would hit that bottom zero line and go negative, and they didn't have software to be able to handle it.
Oh, that's an interesting little trick. So, because they were trying to lie to us in the first place, and their computers couldn't lie, they had to change the scale.
Yeah, yeah. And then it got so bad that they got to a point where they couldn't do anything about it, and they decided to make up another excuse, self-service, and be done with it, and we'll just close it down. That's my take on it, anyway.
So, Chuck, you have had encounters with the EPA, have you not, with your product, the microbes, right? You were in conversation with them. And this is my question. At any point in the conversation, did any of these people have any concern about the high levels of radiation in our air, or show any, like, attitude of, like, that your product might be the right answer if only we could get it to the market? Did they have, I mean, was there any of that tone at all?
Oh, let's just say that it was an issue that it was a dog and pony show trying to figure out who knew more about what was going on. And when it came down to it, I had more information going on than what they wanted to admit to. And when it came down to it, I said, you know, then if you're so aware of what's going on, I said, then you know exactly what I'm capable of doing. And they said, oh, yeah, we know exactly what you're capable of doing. I said, then what are we having issues for? And that was the end of the conversation. They won't talk to me no more.
Wow. So that's about it. There's absolutely no interest in them attempting to resolve the issue?
No, not as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, it's just like, you know, for years, you know, before Fukushima, we've always had multiple issues in the country, whether it was oil leaks, gas line leaks, Monsanto issues, chemical issues. People just don't grasp that Mother Nature has a way of healing herself with her own IV. I mean, people go to extremes. They go to doctors. They go get medication. They go get IVs, blood transfusions when needed. Why are we not treating Mother Nature the same way? Why are we not giving her what she requires to heal and clean herself up?
Well, I think
that that's basically what we're doing. That's what we need to be doing.
Yeah. Well, that's what the idea behind the microbes. That's really about the whole idea.
That's what it is.
Really. Wow. And you, Matt, have you had any direct conversations with the EPA? Do you ever discuss anything with any of these people at the EPA, any of these various grass? Have you ever had a reason to encounter them?
I've talked to them only through email. I haven't called them direct and tried to voice my frustrations.
Well, so you've just emailed them and asked them to explain the graphs or that kind of thing?
Certain technicalities about, you know, what, you know, how they do it, and, you know, what is this number mean when you give it at this hour? Is this just like at a certain exact time frame, or is this an average, or what, you know, what is this? I needed to know what that was all about. And I didn't ask them about their missing, you know, gaps, because they say, oh, it's just, you know, they're doing maintenance on them. They're doing maintenance on the monitor, you know, and it's like, all these monitors don't need that kind of maintenance.
Maintenance on every single monitor across all at the same time. Yeah.
Well, and then a lot of them go down all at the same time, or near, or close to being the same time, or have a look to them that looks like, so, you know, something traveled through and hit this site at this point, and then that site at that point, and look, and then there's blackouts exactly afterwards too that sort of match. So, you know, it's not all monitor stuff. You know, it's certainly that they're knocking the data out, and I prove that by doing downloads every day and watching the data come back where they would hold it, and then they would bring the stuff back, and I could tell that they had a set point at a certain value here, and they have a no-show set point here.
What does that mean? Tell me what that means. A set point and then a no-show. What is that? What are you talking about?
Well, it's sort of like a high water alarm. Let's say you're in a bathtub filling it with water, right? And it gets to a certain point just before it starts flooding out, and you have a little alarm that goes off. And when it starts flooding out, there's another alarm that goes off. So that's sort of the way the radiation thing is. We're sitting in this bathtub, and the radiation levels go up and down. They vary up and down, up and down. And when they get up to a certain point, just before it's ready to flood over the side, an alarm goes off and tells them, oh, we don't want to show everybody we're flooding the bathroom.
Oh, wow. Right? So then they shut it down.
So then they'll shut it down when it starts flooding the bathroom. They won't show you that data. They'll show that it went up just about to where it went over the top of the tub, but they're not going to show you the data of it going over the tub and how much of it is. Except you can look and say, well, it's probably this many hours because they have it blocked out for 4 or 5 days here. And 4 or 5 day blockouts are very common. Very common.
Wow. 4 or 5 day blackouts, not just one day, 4 or 5 days.
Not just one. Yes, 4 or 5 days are very common.
You know, this really reminds me, I really am encouraging all of our listeners to go to YouTube and look at this movie called Quietly Into Disaster. It was created by a doctor in Germany. His name, I think, is Holstrom Strom. And it is just, really, it explains exactly the crooked thinking, the mentally ill thinking of the nuclear industry, and why we find ourselves in this hot mess. I mean, the EPA, just by their directive, their first thing it says in their directive is to protect human health. That is the last thing that they've been doing, by manipulating data, taking things offline. When things go offline, they ought to be sending out warnings that you guys are under extreme danger. And, you know, even if they don't want to tell us how high it is, they should at least be sending out warnings. We've never even heard one.
Exactly.
I mean, the president sat there and told us all, don't worry, we're all perfectly safe, which is, you know, Chuck, you're laughing. I mean, I believed him. I remember looking at the television thinking, thank God they're putting that seawater on the nuclear power plants. They're so smart. Thank God that they're fixing it. I mean, I literally thought that.
And I was,
what, Chuck?
You was having a happy moment, and I was going ballistic.
Yeah, right. See, you knew. I did not know. I mean, of course, I mean, I was living in Oregon right at the time that it happened, but I had grown up next to San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant. I lived in Southern California, in Redondo Beach, the last 8 years I lived in California, but all over Southern California, Orange County, Southern California, LA County, and my family lived in San Diego. I passed that nuclear power plant hundreds of times in my life, probably. I never once knew it was a nuclear facility. I thought my entire life that that was a naval observatory. Because I didn't live in that community. I just drove past it, right? There's no signs. It looks like a dome. The way they have it built, it's right on the edge. Who, in my wildest dreams, I would have never thought they'd put a nuclear facility right on the edge of the ocean. So this is why, like, I'm the perfect post-ignorance person. Like, when I first met Kevin Blanch and he created the idea of the Post-Ignorance Project, I'm like, Kevin, you're speaking like I'll gladly confess. You know, Dr. Phil says you can't change what you don't admit. Like, I will gladly confess. I considered myself to be a smart, intelligent woman. But in regards to finding out about the scientific data of what they're really doing to our country, I left it to our elected officials. I entrusted them with the security of our nation and my own children, 100% believing the president when he said, we are all safe, go about your business. For real.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished, I guess, huh?
Yeah. I think his words were, we have no, there's no immediate threat to our health.
Isn't that always what they say? No immediate threat?
Well, that was actually sort of truthful because the plumes really didn't hit until, well, they didn't hit certain parts of Oregon, in particular Corvallis where I live. They didn't hit here. There was one, I think there was a, the first initial one lasted a couple weeks or a month or something, and then there were some other ones that happened in the fall that were, I think there was like 10 of them that happened just bam, 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 rapid fire. So, you know, when he was talking about that was a mere probably a couple, 3 weeks after Fukushima blew, and this stuff hadn't even gotten to us by then. The only thing that we were getting hit with was the jet stream stuff that got up high enough and came over in the jet stream and dropped down and hit all the way around the world. I mean, people were registering it everywhere. But the main plume, that ground-based plume, the one that came across the water, low on the water surface, that blew across, that was the one that really nailed us. And there were all sorts of instruments going down at that time. Not just, I mean, it was taking out weather monitoring instruments. The radiation levels are that high.
Wow.
Nobody knows about that.
Wow.
And with the jet stream stuff and the moisture coming down, it was detected and showed up in the milk with milk producers in the plains here 28 days after.
Yeah. Yeah, that's jet stream operated stuff, yeah.
Well, we don't even know now because they're not even testing any of our food. I mean, thanks to Hillary Clinton, we are not getting our food tested. So we really are being, and we are importing food from Fukushima. We're literally importing food from Fukushima Prefecture. We import beef,
yep.
We import rice, we import plums, we import tea, green tea. So anybody who drinks those has green tea. Like, it's incomprehensible the level of gross negligence that has gone on as a cultural meme. I mean, Have either of you guys ever thought about this when you're looking at these EPA sites and following the RadNet? Like, it's just astounding the lack of alarms going off as they're just quietly killing our children.
But not only that, you know, you mentioned the food. Here's the other thing people need to stop and think about. If you're going to go spend $70,000, $80,000 to buy a vehicle that was built in Japan that could give you cancer, do you really want to spend that kind of money on a vehicle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's unbelievable, though. But it's not even just the kind of money on a vehicle importing stuff from Japan. We're going to have the 2020 Olympics in Japan. All of our athletes are going to go to the train. I'm sort of believing that what's going to happen is we will have athletes who will go to the 2020 Olympics, go there early, see 3 to 6 months to train like many of them do, and then die of heart attacks during the contest or right before while they're training, because we know the cesium, especially in athletes, especially in young people, it goes after people quite hard. Yeah. I mean, we're coming across, I mean, I know in our country right now there's a sense of impending doom because of the election. Like, many of us feel like there's going to be something very catastrophic about to happen after the election. And I think that general theme has a lot to do with the lack of response to the nuclear volcano from Fukushima. Because they have to have a reason why we have this much radiation going on. They need to create a sense of urgency because they have done nothing but neglect it. I mean, it's incomprehensible that RadNet is willing to just change its monitors. That's essentially what you've reported here today, right, Matt? Is that when it gets too hot,
yeah,
they just change up. They change.
Mm-hmm.
They take things offline. They change the what we're looking at. And they obfuscate the information to make it difficult for us to discern that, yes, indeed, we are in a catastrophic state of poisoning, mass poisoning across our nation. It's kind of like, what was that guy, Jones? What was that man's name, Jeff Jones or whatever his name was, where they all literally drank the Kool-Aid and they all died? Like, that's kind of Jim Jones. That's kind of what we've got is the Jim Jones. I mean, the EPA is now the Jim Jones of the United States, right? We're all supposed to drink the Kool-Aid, not complain, and shove this stuff down our children's throats and poison them.
And see,
yeah,
years ago when I was following and taking screenshots of these numbers all the time, I caught San